They sailed to the region of the Gerasenes, which is across the lake from Galilee. When Jesus stepped ashore, he was met by a demon-possessed man from the town. For a long time, this man had not worn clothes or lived in a house, but he had lived in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell to his feet, shouting at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, the Son of the Most High? I beg you, don't torture me." For Jesus had commanded the evil spirit to come out of the man. Many times it had seized him, and though he was chained hand and foot and kept under guard, he had broken his chains and had been driven by the demon into solitary places. Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "Legion," he replied, because many demons had gone into him. And they begged him repeatedly, "Do not order them to go into the abyss." A large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside. The demons begged Jesus to let them go into them, and he gave them permission. When the demons came out of the man, they went into the pigs, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. When those tending the pigs saw what had happened, they ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone out, sitting at Jesus' feet, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people how the demon-possessed man had been cured. Then all the people of the region of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them, because they were overcome with fear. So he got into the boat and left. The man from whom the demons had gone begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him away, saying, "Return home and tell how much God has done for you." So the man went away and told all over the town what Jesus had done for him.
Will you pray with me? Lord, this morning we are given the story of one of your dramatic healings. And we are given choice to pattern our lives after the man who was healed or after the people who were afraid. This morning, Lord, help us to hear your word and to listen and to choose you. Amen. Our scripture this morning is a tale of fear over trust and of death versus life. We've all been afraid at one time or another, and we all know what it is like to try to make wise decisions when we are trapped in our own fears. It's certainly not easy. As I thought about the way that fear can paralyze us, I remembered back to when I was in gymnastics. Early on in my competitive years, I was learning a backflip dismount off of the bars. This dismount is all about timing and technique. You have to swing as high as you can so that your toes are pointed up toward the ceiling, and then you have to release the bar, not pulling your body towards it, and flip around and land on your feet. If you let go too early, you don't have enough time to complete the flip and you land on the back of your head. If you let go too late, you flip around and land on top of the bar on your shins and fall to your face. Neither one's a particularly fun or comfortable option. Unfortunately, one day as I was learning this dismount, I let go too early, and I landed on the back of my head. And from that point on, I was paralyzed by fear. Every time I did a bar routine, I would go through the routine and then swing high and keep a death grip on the bar. Nothing was taking me off. I was stuck, and I was stuck in the wrong pattern. It didn't matter that my coach was there to assist me or that it was actually more dangerous to hold on to the bar than it would have been to let go. The better option would have been to trust my coaches and to trust my training. But in my fear, I was choosing the more dangerous option. Back in the book of Deuteronomy, Moses told the people, "I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. Now choose life, so that you and your children may live, and that you may love the Lord your God. Listen to his voice and hold fast to him, for the Lord is your life." We are offered the same choice and the same admonition in this morning's passage. It's just dramatically lived out instead of spoken. Jesus' offer of life looks like freedom, community, power, trust, grace, sharing in the work of God. The other option is death, captivity, fear, isolation, and rejection. The choice is ours. Choose life that we may live. Jesus and his disciples have been traveling around Galilee, and one day Jesus decides that they need to go across the Sea of Galilee to the region of the Gerasenes. As soon as he arrives, he's immediately met by a demon-possessed man who is there on the shore. We don't know if this man is simply hanging out there on the shore, resting, making trouble. We're not told. Or perhaps if he is actually driven to the shore by the demons that have control of him to confront Jesus. Either way, as soon as Jesus steps from the boat, he's met by this man. And from the beginning of their interaction, we see the contrast between life and death. This man is filled with demons, not just one demon, but many. Enough that when Jesus asks the man his name, really asking the demon his name, he receives the answer, "Legion," because there's many. A legion was a unit in the Roman army that contained 6,000 soldiers. This is not a small problem for this man. And the demons hold this man in captivity. They often seize hold of him, and they make him do things that he wouldn't do on his own. He's captive in his actions. And then because his actions are captivated by the demons, the community has chained him hand and foot and placed him under guard. Perhaps they feared what he might do. Perhaps they were actually trying to protect him from himself. Either way, he's literally captive in his body and prevented from moving at will. This is our first description of death. The presence of the demons brings captivity, and it brings captivity in both our action and in body. This man's life is clearly not one of peace and wholeness. He's very isolated. He's unpredictable, and he's not really a part of normal society. He doesn't wear clothes. He doesn't live in a house. He doesn't live in the city. Even when he's surrounded by people, those people are guards, not community, not family. And even though the people chain him, he breaks the chains that bind him, and he's driven by the demons into solitary places, desert places. He exhibits great power, enough to break the chains that bind him, but it's not life-giving power. It's destructive power. It pulls him away from the rest of society, and it drives him away from the community that provides life and protection. Ancient Israel isn't big on wilderness and desert places. God has sent them there repeatedly, but while we often think of the desert as a place of emptiness, it's maybe a place we don't really want to go, but it's not probably particularly frightening. That's not true for the ancient Israelites. The desert means something else. When you leave towns or the well-traveled paths, it's dangerous. There are bandits on the roads who will attack. There are wild beasts. It's the lions and the other dangerous animals who live out in the wilderness. If you go into the desert, you go at your own risk. and they don't like to go there often. Yet that's where the demons drive this man. He's forced into seclusion by the presence of the demons. And so this is our second characteristic of the presence of demons. Their presence isolates us from the people who provide community, love, and connection. Then we see how the presence of the demons literally brings death. This man has a very strange home. He's driven by the demons not into town, but out into the tombs outside of town, literally into the resting place of the dead. And the demons bring death to more than just the man. When Jesus casts them out of the man and they beg to enter the pigs, Jesus grants permission, but their entrance into the pigs brings death to the pigs as well. Literal death, as they rush down the mountainside into the sea and drown. The presence of the demons, the presence of evil, brings death, physical death. As the story continues, we see two additional characteristics of death. Fear seems to be one of the continual themes of this story. The demons are afraid. The people of the town are afraid. After the pigs die, the herdsmen rush into town and they report everything that happens. We're not told that they're actually afraid of what happens to the pigs, but they certainly don't stay around to ask Jesus any questions or to see what else he's going to do. They run off and tell the story to others. And that results in a large crowd gathering around Jesus. And the people are frightened. They're frightened before they even arrive. And then when they arrive and they see the man dressed, sitting in his right mind, at the feet of Jesus, that in itself is enough to frighten them further. The people who witness this man's release tell how the man was healed. And they're, again, afraid. The people aren't rejoicing, which perhaps would be the better response to a man set free. And they seem to be less afraid of having a man in their midst who is filled with a legion of demons than having Jesus there and having the man in his right mind. They've accepted evil into their very midst, and they would rather have that than have life and have God. Perhaps the people know what to do with the demoniac. Maybe they feel like at least they know what to expect with him. They can't control him, but they're used to it. Or perhaps they would just rather not have someone even more powerful in their midst. They are gripped with fear. And we get to see our fourth characteristic of death. Finally, the people ask Jesus to leave. Is his power too much for them to bear? Is his goodness and his triumph over evil too unpredictable for them? Does it challenge their lives too much? We're not really told why they are afraid. But we do know that the people's fear results in their rejection of Jesus. And he's the one who can bring dramatic transformation to this man and to them. The culmination of these characteristics of death is the rejection of God. On the other side, we see a stark contrast in Jesus' actions. The first thing he does for the man who's possessed by the demons is command the demons to leave. Jesus recognizes their presence in this man. He recognizes that they're destructive, and he recognizes that there is a larger battle going on between good and evil. And so he enters the battle. And what we witness is a very strange interaction between Jesus and the demons. The demons' response is to fall at Jesus' feet. They're certainly not bowing there to worship him, but they still seem to recognize something in Jesus that is more powerful than them, that he has more control over who they are and what they will do. And so they call Jesus by name. They identify him as the Son of the Most High God. And they beg these demons who have exercised such power over this man, beg Jesus not to cast them into the abyss. And they beg again to be cast into the pigs. They must request from God what they want. All of their power is nothing in the face of the Lord. And so here in the first part of the story, we see the power and the goodness of God displayed over death. As the demons are cast out of the man, we see life restored in many forms. The man is restored to freedom. Instead of being driven and controlled by the demons, the man acts of his own will. He no longer needs to be bound hand and foot. He sits peacefully at Jesus' feet, listening to Jesus teach. We see this man restored to his community. He re-enters society with the first action simply of putting on clothes. And then he's sitting there among the people. At the end of the story, when Jesus gets back in the boat to leave, the man asks to go with him. And Jesus sends him back to his own home, to his own community, to his own people. He's literally restored to the community of people who know him, and the community which provides safety, connection, and care. And in this restoration, we see two final characteristics of life displayed. If the people have been governed by fear, this man becomes characterized by trust. He isn't afraid. He's sitting in the presence of Jesus, and his desire is to stay with Jesus and to travel with him. He doesn't know anything about where Jesus is going or what Jesus is going to be doing. He doesn't know any of the details about what it means to travel with Jesus. But none of that seems to matter. He's received back life. And so he casts himself wholly on Jesus, and he trusts him completely, asking to travel with him. Compared to the fear of the people, this absolute trust is a dramatically different response. It's a response of the one who's received back life. And finally, we see this man given a testimony to share in the work of God. Before, the people of the town would have been afraid of him. They sought to control him. Now he's given a job by the Lord to go and tell everyone around how much God has done for him. So the man travels throughout the whole city, witnessing to all about the power of God to restore life in the presence of death. He gets to participate in the work of God in community. The presence of Jesus is life. It's freedom, community, power over death, trust, and a share in the work of the Lord. The absence of Jesus is death. It's captivity, isolation, fear, rejection of God. The choice is ours. What will we choose? Jesus brings freedom from captivity, from the things that hold us captive. And so then we have to ask, what is it that holds us captive? Where do we need freedom? Are we bound by sin? Even socially acceptable sins like anger, greed, materialism? Perhaps we are physical captives of one kind or another. Will we accept the freedom of God, or would we rather have the known quantity that is sin and evil in our lives? A lot of times we'd rather accept evil. In our community, we need only think of the anger that's displayed on the freeway during rush hour, or the death grip that alcohol, power, destruction hold over the community of Isla Vista. Have we simply accepted captivity and death? And if so, where do we, as individuals or as a community, need the freedom and the life of Jesus? Pray for Jesus' life to come and surrender. The presence of Jesus requires that surrender and that trust in a world that is controlled by fear. We are asked to cast ourselves on Jesus' power and his presence. I began this morning by telling the story of learning the Bar Dismount. And in the midst of my fear, the solution was actually trust. One of my coaches was very strong, and he could protect me if my timing was off. Or if I refused to let go and kept that death grip on the bar, he could actually arm wrestle me off of the bar, which he had to do on occasion. Ultimately, I had to learn to turn myself over to him and to trust him as over and over I learned to release the bar, trusting that he would help me get to the ground safely on my feet, not my face, until eventually I could learn the dismount on my own. Life with God is an adventure. An adventure is often scary and it's always unpredictable. Through my entire gymnastics career, every time I performed that dismount, I was never completely certain how it would turn out until I was safely on the ground. It's hard when we don't know where we're going or how we're going to get there or what's going to happen when we arrive. It's not really how we like to run our lives, but the other option is to live in fear. And in that fear, we reject the presence and the call of God. He has work for us to do. He has set us up as witnesses to his power, his presence, love, grace, and freedom. Life with Jesus is unpredictable. It's powerful, but it's good. It's an adventure, and we have to give something up, but we're given life in return. This morning, the Lord is calling us to choose life, to cast ourselves completely on him in full trust and dependence, and to enter into the work of God individually and together as the community created by and bound together in his name. So which will we choose? Choose life that we may live, for the Lord is our life.